My name is Terry Kirby, and I'm the Operations Director and Chief Submersible Pilot with University of Hawaii's Hawaii Undersea Research Lab that operates the Pisces 4 and Pisces 5 submersibles. We discovered the wreck of the I-400 in 2013 on a dive with Maritime Heritage Program. So NOAA's Maritime Heritage Program is part of their mission to locate and survey historic wreck sites. And we had been, there was a target that we had been interested in some time. And so we went out and checked it out, and it turned out to be the I-400. And when we discovered the wreckage, the main hull was there, but the whole superstructure of this 400-foot-long aircraft carrier submarine was missing. So the 115-foot hangar and the conning tower and the anti-aircraft guns. So the main hull with the catapult launch ramp back up to where the hangar started and was missing. So when we did that dive, we hadn't located the rest of the wreckage and moved on to another site and actually discovered two historic wreck sites on that day for National Marine Sanctuaries. But the following year in 2014, NHK from Japan came back to do a documentary on the I-400 and wanted to locate the rest of the wreckage and really confirm that that was the I-400. So we had a one-day dive with two subs for NHK for a documentary and located the giant hangar door and then the conning tower is totally intact, laying on its side with the periscopes totally extended. And we located the part of the hangar and the anti-aircraft guns. So we found an amazing, vast debris field of everything that came out of that 400-foot submarine when it plummeted to the bottom. And at the very end of the dive, Pisces 4 had gone to the surface, and I was moving out away from the debris field waiting to leave the bottom, and I came across this brass bell. And this beautiful bell, totally intact, right on the edge of the debris field that was part of this wreck. And Hans von Tilburg, who is an archaeologist with NOAA's National Marine Sanctuaries, was with me at the time. And, of course, we couldn't really touch the bell, but we found it was there and recorded it and went back to the surface. And I was asked to give a presentation at the BOFIN on the discovery of the I-400. And during that presentation, I showed a picture of the bell. And that sort of started the wheels moving, the fact that that bell really belonged in a museum and not on the bottom of the ocean and have something really tangible as part of this historic wreck that all the public could enjoy. And so that really started things moving with the BOFIN Museum to try and get a permit from the Navy's Naval Heritage and History and Heritage Command. And that's a very long process. So we started that in 2014 or 2015. And finally, just before the dives, a permit finally came through. That what we had planned to do on the dives was normally we have 3 days of test dives after refit to work up from shallow water to deep and do a maximum depth dive down to 6,500 feet to recertify the subs. And then the subs are good to take scientists down and start doing science missions, and we get all the little wrinkles out of them. So to go with this permit, there was a plan to wait until those dives were done. And then we would have a dedicated archaeology dive, take an archaeologist down there that would do an archaeological survey. We would recover the bell. But that day rate for the ship and the subs is about $48,000 a day. And none of the agencies could really come up with it. So to try and still recover the bell, we were going to try and do it on a test dive. And our first test dive, which we're going to be going back to the I-400 anyway. So that meant that the subs hadn't been on the water in a year, and that meant that we wouldn't have had a dive beforehand to try and relocate the bell, and we had very limited time to find the bell before we headed on downslope to be at a deep enough depth to start our next dive. So it was pretty tense. We had archaeologists out there waiting on the ship to receive the bell if we could find it. And we got on the bottom of this massive debris field, and I got in an area where I thought the bell was, and it took a little bit, but I finally found it. And when I got up to it with a collecting bucket, I went to recover it, and my manipulator had failed on the Pisces 4. So I couldn't pick the bell up, but the Pisces 5 was on the bottom, and it was a team effort. We got those two subs bow to bow. We're touching our sample basket, and Max in Pisces 5 could reach over their manipulator and pick up the bell and put it in our collecting bucket. So it was pretty tense up above with people in the communications room waiting to hear if we found it and then if we recovered it. So 1 minute we were looking for it, and then we finally found it, and then the manipulator didn't work, and then we finally had it in the bucket. Everybody was pretty relieved. So we got back to the surface, and it went into a special container and was shipped the next day to Chico State University, where they'll do a long preservation process, where it'll eventually go into the Bofin Museum to be on display for all to see. Yeah, everybody was, because we were out of time, and just to finally pull that off on this test dive and get it back just felt like a real achievement to everybody. And, you know, we moved on to our other test dives and worked up to our maximum depth dive. But actually pulled that off on our first dive after a long refit on both subs, after over a year since they'd been on the water, and to go back there since 2014 and actually find it again was a pretty exciting dive. The thing that we thought was very cool was the fact that that bell could have ended up in any museum on the mainland or on the East Coast, and right now it has been entrusted to the Bofin Museum, so it's going to stay in Hawaii for everybody to see. And it came off a very historic wreck, and what we find on the bottom is that when you're close to one of these wrecks, there's this amazing connection with its history. You're looking out at, like when we found the Midget submarine or we found the wreck of the I-400, you're basically part of that history now, and now that part of that history is going to be on display for all to see.
Give me a little bit of background about the actual ship.
The I-400 was an incredible piece of technology. They were submarines that were ordered, built through a specific design by Yamamoto at the beginning of the war. He needed a submarine that actually carry aircraft, carry bombers, and could go all the way from Japan to the either east coast or west coast of the United States and back to Japan without refueling. They could actually go 1.5 times around the world without having to refuel. They carried 3 special-made sarin bombers that the wings could fold up and go inside of a 115-foot-long hangar, nose to tail. They could surface, open a giant watertight door, and move those aircraft out, fold out the wings, attach pontoons, and arm them, and launch all 3 off a catapult launch ramp in about 45 minutes. They could land the aircraft in the water and taxi up next to the submarine. They had a giant crane that folded out of the deck. They could pick the aircraft up, swing them in, put them back on their catapult pedestals, fold them up, stuff them back in the hangar, and close the door and dive and disappear. It transformed submarines from anti-shipping warfare to what we're looking at today, and with a new submarine technology where you can park off an enemy shores and attack their cities. So that was the first role. And he wanted 18 of them made, but only 2 of them were completed, 2 of the 400-foot ones, the I-400 and the I-401. And there were 2 others that were 378 feet long that were also aircraft carrier subs that could carry 2 bombers. And that was the I-13 and the I-14. So they were the only ones that were actually completed. And they really didn't get into action in time of the war. It was toward the end of the war. They were all sort of deployed on a suicide mission to Ulithi Atoll to attack the invasion fleet. And the war ended before they got there, and they were ordered to surrender. And that was a pretty amazing story in itself. The American submarines that discovered these huge subs trying to get back to Japan couldn't believe what they were seeing. And so U.S. prize crews went on these giant subs. They took them back to Japan, and once they went through them with the Japanese and learned how they operated – U.S. prize crews sailed those three giant aircraft carrier subs from Japan back to Hawaii. So we've seen some amazing images of them rafted up in Pearl Harbor, these gigantic aircraft carrier submarines. And they were going through them in detail for about 3 months until the Russians found out about them. And the Russians wanted to be able to have access to that technology as well. And by that time, the Cold War started heating up. And so the Navy in 1946 took them out one at a time off of Barbers Point and torpedoed them and sent them to the bottom. And that technology was forgotten until we found the I-401 with the Pisces 5 in 2005. And we have since found all three of them. And even when you know how big they are, to approach a submarine that's 400 feet long and a 20-foot submersible is an awesome experience.